This is The Record. I'm Steve Scherr.
I'm Ross Reynolds. If you believe what the commercials say, there's an app for pretty much anything, including 400 apps that claim to help you quit smoking and countless other apps that claim to help you with other addictions. But do they actually work? Who knows? The Food and Drug Administration doesn't test them. Dr. Jonathan Bricker is an associate professor of psychology at the University of Washington, where he focuses on addiction in his work, and he's been looking into these addiction apps. I asked him if he's found any proof to indicate these apps help people with their addictions and addictive behaviors.
Well, I really wish there was proof. There isn't proof yet. There's a lot of promise of what apps can do, and our research lab is testing apps specifically for quitting smoking, and there are some other labs around the world that are testing it for other addictions. But it's going to be a while before the science catches up. And right now, there, like you said, there are hundreds of apps for any kind of addiction, but their actual proof is unknown. And so this is unfortunately a disparity that needs to be addressed.
Well, it's interesting that all these apps are out there. To become a psychologist, you have to be certified in some way, but someone can put out an app like this that claims to have some benefit in addiction, but they don't have to prove that it works.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyone can make up anything. I mean, anyone can write a book about helping any kind of addiction or website, and the same is true with apps. So anyone can come up with an app, and that's a problem.
Do you think an app alone could help conquer an addiction? Is it part of a bigger program?
I think an app alone couldn't be able to conquer it. But there's a certain vision I think people have to have about what apps can do. You see, it really does open up a huge world of reach to people who may not otherwise seek services for addictions treatments because of stigma of getting treatment for addiction, or because of the cost of getting treatment for addiction, or that they live in an area where good addiction treatment is not available. The apps alone cannot substitute a program for treatment, whether that's individual counseling or group program or residential treatment or what have you, or seeing your physician. So they're not a replacement for those important face-to-face services, but they do get people in the door. They get people started. They get people working on. And they have the potential to help people recognize that what they have is a problem. It's just that whether those things are effective at doing that is what we don't know yet.
Well, are they effective, and is someone going to use it is another question. How do you get someone who's about to reach for a cigarette to pick up their phone instead and maybe interact with an app that's going to keep them from picking up that cigarette?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. But what we are seeing is that people are reaching for them. We know, for example, let's take smoking, for example. So this is the one addiction that we know kills the most people. It kills 6 million people every year around the world. And people are downloading apps for quitting smoking. 20 million times people have downloaded apps for quitting smoking in the last 2 years. How are people using apps? We don't know yet. Now, our research lab has learned about specific ways that people are using the app that we developed, and we're learning very interesting things. We're learning, for example, tracking. Now, tracking is one of the basic features that apps can do. You can track your smoking behavior or your drug use behavior. You can track your cravings. And we're finding actually that it's only certain types of tracking that predict whether you would quit smoking. So just tracking whether you smoke doesn't predict.
Really?
It actually predicts more smoking, which is interesting.
That is interesting. So on the app you're working on, what kind of tracking behavior might be effective in discouraging someone from smoking?
What we're learning is the tracking of letting your cravings pass without trying to act on them, without trying to smoke a cigarette.
I wanted a cigarette, but I didn't smoke one.
Exactly. So that type of tracking was helpful, whereas just tracking your smoking actually predicted more smoking. Now, we think that's just an artifact of tracking, that the past predicts the future. So if you're smoking now and then we follow them up in several months, we find they're more likely to be smoking. So that's not too surprising, but people often think, well, if I track this, then I'll be less likely to smoke. And it actually doesn't quite work that way. So that kind of information is very valuable. Nobody knows this kind of information before without actually collecting data and doing research on it, because people do well-intended things. They put these features in, and they think, well, this seems helpful. But it turns out it may actually be useless.
Jonathan Bricker is with us. He's a psychologist at the University of Washington. He's also on the staff at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. And a lot of his work has to do with addiction behavior, and he's looking at the way that apps, those things on our phone, might be able to help us out. Well, as we've talked about, we're not really sure whether apps can help or not. There are some things that might help, but are there things that apps could do for someone who is trying to quit an addictive behavior? Could the app actually encourage that behavior rather than discourage it, which would be the intent?
I don't think that's too likely to happen. Here's an example where someone can fool themselves into thinking that the app is helpful. So a good example is from what we found from our data is that tracking how much you use, I would say, actually is neither harmful nor helpful. But you may come to believe that I've done something useful today by tracking. And actually, it hasn't really done anything
yep,
at all.
Yep, smoked 20 cigarettes.
20 cigarettes today.
It's not going to keep you from smoking 20 cigarettes tomorrow.
Exactly. It doesn't get you to stop. And so I think that there's an empirical example where I wouldn't necessarily say it was harmful, but you may be fooling yourself into thinking you did something useful when it actually didn't do anything useful at all. There is a lot of well-intended information that's put on apps, and that I believe that a lot of those apps won't be that helpful to them. And we really, really need to do the studies. We need to do the research to find out which is actually helpful to people and which isn't.
In the meantime, someone has an addiction behavior they'd like to stop. They go to an app store. They see hundreds of apps listed. What's your advice for them?
Well, my advice for them is to look closely at the user comments, not the user ratings.
What are you looking for when you read the comments?
You want to look for four things.
Okay.
The first thing you want to look for is does it have a tracking feature that helps you deal with cravings in some way? Does it have a reward feature that rewards you for drug-free or smoke-free days? Does it have some type of motivational messages that it sends you, inspirational messages, testimonials? And does it provide you some type of skills training to deal with your cravings, whether that's AA, a 12-step program, or some type of tips or strategies for dealing with cravings in the moment? If users are talking about those types of comments, it's a good sign that that app will probably be helpful to you. But like we say, we don't know for sure because we need to test them.
Do you think this is something the federal government should get involved in? Should there be government regulation of these apps?
I think the stance that the government has been taking is what is a medical device? And my understanding is the FDA does not regard these types of apps as medical devices, like, for example, something for monitoring your glucose levels if you're diabetic. But I do think it's a wise idea for them to set guidelines for what are good, empirically supported strategies that we know are helpful in other modalities. We know there are certain types of information that is helpful for dealing with addictions, and to recommend these sorts of guidelines for people when they're at least selecting, like a consumer guide to help you select apps, because there's so many out there and it's so deceptive to just look at the ratings and say, well, gee, I'll just download that one. Because I think it would be a shame for someone to download an app, find it useless, or find it silly and say, well, apps aren't helpful, when in point of fact, there may be things out there that are guided by good information or even scientifically tested that could help them but are not necessarily the popular ones.
That's advice from Jonathan Bricker. He's a psychologist at the University of Washington and also at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. He's worked on websites to help people quit smoking, and he's currently working on an app for smoking cessation. With Steve Scherr, I'm Ross Reynolds. This is The Record on KUOW.